if I have the right to end my suffering by killing myself,
right.
why would I not have the right to end my suffering in a way that improves my quality of life or what I have left?
Welcome to the Daily Mushroom Podcast. Today we have Thomas Hartle on the podcast. This is a really amazing episode. Thomas is the first Canadian to get the legal exemption to use psilocybin therapy. In August of 2016, he was diagnosed with stage 4 terminal cancer and is still going. He's going strong. He's got one of the best outlooks on life of anyone I've ever met. And I really, really hope you guys all enjoy this conversation. It's an incredible one. So tune in and enjoy.
We'll just flow. We're live. We're talking now.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Thomas. So let's just kind of from the top here. I just kind of want to know, you know, who is Thomas Hartle? Tell us who you are, where you're from. Let's start there.
Well, I guess officially I'm a 53-year-old stage 4 cancer survivor. I live in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I'm would consider myself to be, about as boring as white bread for most stuff. I have, gotten involved in the psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy department out of necessity for myself.
Right.
I have, suffered from what I would consider a considerable amount of existential dread from my terminal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I have reached out and managed to get a Section 56 exemption, and I have had the amazing experience of the improvement of quality of life that this type of therapy can offer.
Awesome.
And since that has been something that's benefited me, I have sort of reached out to, other organizations, and I'm really trying to promote this as a therapy that should be, in my opinion, more mainstream. And I think one of the main things that is restricting that is a lack of information for the people who matter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more on that one. So let's, just for our listeners who aren't familiar with the Section 56, what exactly is the Section 56 exemption?
So the use of psychedelics here in Canada is illegal. Mm-hmm. So... it's classed in the same sort of a category as many other drugs, such as heroin and cocaine and things like that, where they were deemed to not have any medicinal value.
Right.
And as a result, if somebody wishes to use those for a medicinal purpose, then the Office of Controlled Substances, specifically the Minister of Health, must grant that person an exemption to the laws
right.
that will enable them to actually use that
right.
in this therapeutic setting. And that exception is called Section 56.
Very, very well explained. That's perfect. So kind of take us on the path here of getting that Section 56 exemption. Kind of how did that start? Like kind of bring us into the story there of, or maybe let's go back a little bit further. 2016, you were diagnosed. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
I was, yes.
Yeah, and then you did so, chemotherapy, radiation treatment, and then...
No radiation.
Okay.
My particular type of cancer is colon cancer.
Okay.
And unfortunately, your colon moves around.
Mm.
And for radiation, they need a more stationary target. So
okay.
I do not qualify for radiation.
Okay.
Had one major surgery in 2016, where they actually discovered the cancer.
Right.
At the time, they had thought that I had Crohn's disease and had been treating me for that. And as it turns out, that was unfortunately not the case.
Right.
Fortunate or unfortunate, I know Crohn's is not a fantastic
no walk
diagnosis
in the park
either. But did my surgery. I did 12 rounds of FOLFOX chemotherapy, and I had a considerable number of side effects from that, including neuropathy. That'll come into play in a little bit when I'm investigating what to do about that.
Right.
Then in 2017, I had a second major surgery, and they kind of figured that they had gotten what they could find in there.
Right.
And so, you know, that was a pretty happy day for me back in 2017. So, you know, they couldn't see any more cancer, and they sent me in for PET scans every 3 months. Mm. Now, if you're not familiar with a PET scan, that's... So cancer cells have a larger number of insulin receptors than regular cells do. So right. if there's sugar in your system, the cancer mm-hmm. cells get it first.
Yes.
And they give you a radioactive sugar. And the idea is that the more metabolically active cancer cells will grab that sugar, and then they will glow
right.
when they observe mm-hmm. it. And they just kind of overlay that glow on a CT scan mm-hmm. so that they can see the relative position of where it's glowing to where it is in your body.
Right.
So I was getting those every 3 months, and every single one of those was coming back completely clear.
Really?
So I'm feeling good about things, right. and you know, life is good. I'm moving on with life.
Right.
And over the course of the next couple of years, I started experiencing some of the symptoms that I had experienced before, specifically anemia.
Okay.
Anemia is low hemoglobin.
Okay.
So I went to my family doctor to get that checked out, and my hemoglobin was, I believe, down to 67.
What's a normal level?
Regular, normal range is 130 to 180.
Hmm.
So, it was really not that surprising with those numbers that I was having a lot of trouble just walking around right. and stuff.
Yeah.
So we knew something was wrong, and so I was scheduled to go in for a colonoscopy, and during the course of that, they found that there were a couple of bleeding tumors mm. in my intestines.
Okay. So this is the point where it kind of moved to stage four, like it's metastasized at that point?
No, I've been stage four since 2016.
Okay, right on.
Yeah, I've stage four right out of the gate.
Oh, wow. So the tumors, like the bleeding tumors, that was causing the anemia?
Yeah, it was. So I was bleeding faster than I could manufacture new blood.
Yeah.
So they scheduled me for another surgery in 2019, mm. and they had kind of intended that I would lose the rest of my large intestine.
Mm.
And, you know, there were some potential surgical options where they could reattach things or maybe, you know, a colectomy bag or something like that. Unfortunately, when they opened me up for that third surgery, it turns out the cancer by then was so extensive that surgery was no longer an option for me.
Right.
So they just cleaned up the incision line and close things back up again. So
wild.
So that is really where I started to experience, you know, the real anxiety, because it was at that point that I realized that, you know, not only did they not have any means of telling me the severity of the cancer,
right?
But you know, now my treatment options are just about gone.
Right. So what was the message from your medical doctor at that point, where they were like, What did they communicate to you after, you know, kind of just going in to do a surgery, but then saying that there's nothing we can do? Like, how did that go?
Yeah, well, you know, it's got to be a rough day for a doctor.
Yeah.
I really feel for him, because, you know, it can't be easy having to give that kind of news
mm-hmm.
any more easy than it is receiving it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've had a couple of years to deal with my cancer, and I've always felt that I've dealt with it fairly well.
Right.
And, you know, finding out that it's not as under control as what you think it is.
Right.
And then to have your surgeon, you know, tell you that you've got tumors all over your digestive tract, and, you know, there's a very good possibility that one of two things will happen, I will have another tumor that will grow to a point where it blocks my intestines and I can no longer
digest, eat,
process food.
Yeah.
So, you know, at that point, you know, there's nothing they can do surgically.
Mm-hmm.
Or because I have the tumors on the intestines, they have weak spots on them. So
right.
likewise,
right.
I could have perforation or a rupture in the intestines. And again, there's nothing they can do about that.
Right.
So, I mean, functionally, it means that if things progress to that point, I could have, you know, a life-ending event any old time.
Yeah, ticking time bombs in there, eh? And so the combination of that with them kind of saying, you know, we don't know what else to do. I can only imagine just that feeling of, oh, just lost, I guess, right? Like, where do you go? What's the next step?
Yeah. So for me, the treatment-wise, the only options I have available to me is the chemotherapy,
right,
which you know, I do every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I have, I'm up to 56 rounds of chemo I've had now.
Wow.
That is...
that's a lot, man.
I worked it out one time. That's it's like more than 20 gallons of chemotherapy I've had pass through me. It's like more than my body weight.
Wow. Well, you look great. I got to say that. That's a lot of chemotherapy, man. And that's spread out of the course. I guess there was a break there, right? Between 2017, 2019.
So that 2 years that I thought everything was going good. Yeah. So no chemotherapy, no surgery or anything during that time. I was literally just living my life.
Right. And so, like, how were your anxiety levels at that time? Like, were you were kind of just, you're back, right?
Yeah, yeah, I was good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm normally a really positive person. Yeah. And, you know, it's no different in my little break from treatments. You know, I was enjoying life. I was working full time. Right. You know, really no different from anybody else.
Right. Yeah, and then that event in 2019. So it's been 2 years since that surgery where they, you know, they cut you open and then they closed you back up. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it has. 2 years. Wow.
Yeah, time flies, I guess.
That is I gotta admit, that's 2 years longer than I thought I was gonna have.
Yeah, no doubt. So how are you feeling right now? Like as far as digestion and everything goes?
Well, you know, I tend to stick to a low-carb diet. Mm. I have to really watch the types of foods that I eat.
No sugar, I'm guessing?
You know, no sugar. No. I haven't had refined sugar since 2016.
Wow.
I cut that out of my diet entirely. You know, if it's...
Do you crave it at all?
In fruit or something like that, I'll be okay with that in limited amounts. But, you know, a piece of chocolate cake is out of the question.
Right. It's highly addictive stuff, man. Yeah, that's one thing that a lot of people can't kick that, right? So, yeah.
Oh, it comes down to a matter of motivation, really.
Absolutely. You know, you've got some pretty good motivation. Probably the best.
I really honestly just picture the stuff as straight up poison.
Yeah. Wow.
I can't even put it in my mouth.
That's powerful. Yeah. Okay, so kind of we're at kind of 2019 now, right? So you've had that surgery or the failed surgery, feeling lost, not really sure where to go. How does that now kind of meet and come together with alternative psychedelic therapy?
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, alternative medicines and I guess it would be more accurate for me to call it adjuvant therapies, because
I wouldn't
want anybody to get the impression that I don't do the traditional medical route.
Right. You know, you're doing both.
You know, I think, you know, surgery and chemotherapy and that stuff, it's effective and it works.
Right.
Not the only solution.
There you go.
I don't believe my experience.
Yeah.
There is a wealth of knowledge in, you know, traditional Chinese medicine, in some tribal medicines. So when I am approaching my cancer treatment, I'm not just looking at Western medicine. I'm looking at things that will, you know, enhance my immune system to help my body combat it.
Amazing.
To reduce my response from the sympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether you're familiar with some of that or not, but
a little bit, just from some experience I've been doing with breath work recently, in engaging.
Yeah, so it's like this. In nature, if a zebra is getting chased by, you know, the lion, the zebra is fully engaged in this sympathetic nervous system.
Okay.
You know, the adrenaline is pumping. Right. You know, the heart beats faster. The circulation to unnecessary limbs is reduced, and you know, it's definitely the fight or flight.
Right.
Humans are not so different from the animal kingdom in terms of the way that we respond.
Right.
So we still get that same response. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, your repair mechanisms and things in your body just shut down because it's not necessary when you're running for your life.
Yeah.
The key difference with humans and animals is that with humans, we have this thing called anxiety that prevents that
right.
from shutting off.
Ah.
You know, we have anxiety, we get depression, and we get stuck in our heads.
Right.
And this sympathetic nervous system just keeps on going.
Wow.
So rather than allowing your body to get into these more restful, restorative states, you just can't.
Right. I've never heard it explained that way. That's super fascinating. That this flaw of human beings that we are kind of always either rambling around in the past or projecting into the future, right? And the inability to turn that off can cause us some pretty unbelievable distress and potentially cause a lot of illness that we see in the world today, right? So.
Oh, it absolutely does. Mm-hmm. You know, you just need to look around you at the number of people who are on medications to try to help with their
anxiety,
depression, anxiety,
PTSD,
you know, despondency.
Yeah.
It's something that there are thousands and thousands of people suffering from.
Absolutely.
And it is, you know, I believe a contributing factor to the other health crises that we have.
Right.
People like myself, you know, full of cancer, autoimmune disorders from arthritis, you know, to skin conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Reduced immune systems where, you know, we're not able to fight diseases as well as I believe we should be able to.
Mm.
So, you know, for me, all of this stuff sort of wraps together into a package.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, when I started really experiencing this severe anxiety with, you know, the potential of dropping dead in an afternoon, I recognized that... if I couldn't bring myself out of that state, then I didn't really have a whole lot of hope to experience any healing myself, or I guess if you were to talk to doctors who consider stage 4 cancer to be incurable,
right.
It's a matter of longevity.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who have had stage 4 cancer and are able to live for really extended periods of time and have a good quality of life.
Right.
I would like to be one of those people.
Yeah. That's right, man. You got the right attitude for it.
So, you know, I started looking for ways that I could alleviate that sense of dread and anxiety that I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And having had prior symptoms from my first round of chemo, the neuropathy, I have experience with other natural plant-based and fungus-based medicines that have been effective for me.
So this goes back to your experimenting with alternative plant-based medicines. That goes back to 2016? Like you're kind of.
He does, yes.
Oh, okay, right on.
Right out of the gate.
Yeah, I was going to.
I mean, I've had a lot of family members who have passed from cancer.
Mm.
You know, there's no two ways about it. You know,
right.
Both of my parents have had cancer. Mm. I've had, you know, mother-in-law, father-in-law pass from cancer. You know, aunts, uncles, nieces. It's just this whole litany of family members who are no longer here.
Right.
And, you know, I have looked into treatments on different therapies that would contribute to boost the effectiveness of chemotherapy and immune systems and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And there's a wealth of knowledge out there with studies that are being done on places like PubMed which would be a location where medical researchers publish their papers.
Okay.
So somebody does medical research on the Johns Hopkins study, yeah. for example, on psilocybin, yeah. that is there.
Yeah.
In my particular case, I was looking into something for neuropathy, mm. and I came across lion's mane mushrooms, which are a neurogenic.
Mm-hmm. I was just enjoying a lion's mane tea here right now during our chat. I love this stuff.
Good stuff.
It's great. Yeah. So,
I was taking 4 grams a day of lion's
wow.
mane mushrooms, and I had waited a year after the end of my first round of chemo for the neuropathy to go away, and it just wasn't. I was having trouble doing up buttons. I would have to hold the wall in the shower so I wouldn't fall over because I couldn't feel my feet.
Wow.
And after using the lion's mane mushrooms, it took some time.
Right.
Probably about 6 months. Nerves don't grow fast, but they do grow.
Right, and that's 4 grams a day consistently for six
yes.
months.
Wow. Yep.
Heavy dosages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's the therapeutic doses of some of these are a lot higher than what people think
right.
they are.
Yeah.
Right now with as an adjuvant treatment for my cancer, I do turkey tail mushrooms,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Turkey tail extract,
yeah.
and I do at least 8 grams a day of that.
Wow. How do you take these mushrooms? Like, what's the preferred method? I'm just thinking of 4 grams of mushrooms is quite a lot of
mushrooms. Yeah,
not to mention
it's it's a concentrated extract.
Okay,
so I put it into capsules.
Oh, cool!
And I take capsules.
Yeah, great.
So it's 16 capsules a day
yeah,
with
just popping those vitamins.
The turkey tail.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so you've experienced. So it's not just psilocybin mushrooms. There's been a lot of mushrooms on your road to healing here.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
For my particular therapy, I feel like vitamin D is another
yeah.
one that is important.
Mm-hmm.
So I take 10 to 20,000 units a day of vitamin D.
Wow. Yeah.
It depends if I've been in the sun or not.
Right. Yeah.
But I definitely take the extra capsules. I take high doses of zinc. So
yeah, zinc.
High doses of vitamin C.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are very restorative, and your body needs those.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is really, really tough on the body, so it's important
yes.
to supply it with everything it needs to rebuild when it has the time to do it.
Right, and remove everything that it feeds off of at the same time.
Yeah, milk thistle. Extract.
Okay.
With the chemotherapy that I'm on, milk thistle is something that helps to restore your liver.
Right.
So it's one of the few things that will actually help to treat a damaged liver. And chemotherapy is just straight up rough on things.
Yeah.
So very important to try to help the organs that are not broken.
Right. Absolutely. So I have a question. When you're diagnosed, is this, so the turkey tail, the zinc, the high dose vitamin D, high dose vitamin C, was that recommended by your doctor?
God, no.
Interesting. So you had to go out and figure this out for yourself.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. My oncologists are, very much, by the book.
Mm.
They are very much the chemo, surgery, and radiation school of thought.
Yeah.
Not that they tell me not to do any of these things, but...
It's not in their training.
It's not in their wheelhouse, no. And I don't know whether that's for insurance purposes or whether they're just genuinely not informed. I find it personally hard to believe that they would be that unfamiliar with the studies that I'm going out and seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, I would really hate to think that I'm better informed than my oncologists are, but...
Well, I mean, you're the one with stage 4 terminal cancer, though, right? Like, you have way more motivation to research this stuff.
I do.
On a personal
yeah.
level, right? So you've got a deeper drive there. And it's, we spoke about this a little bit before. My mother went through her own terminal diagnosis about 9 years ago, and that was I knew the answer to that question of did any of your oncologists recommend these? I just kind of wanted to hear it from you because I didn't see any of that either. It was just pain meds and chemo and really nothing to like bolster the immune system or talk about health. It was kind of just like, it was all about like defense, mm-hmm. attack. Offense, attack, without like the defense of, let's build you up and make you as strong as possible, which is very strange that's not a conversation. And
it's another one of those things that I have a little bit of a problem with the Western approach mm-hmm. to medicine. Right. It's aggressive in
right.
the way that it approaches diseases.
It's like militaristic almost, right? Like storming the beaches.
Yeah. it feels, more like an extension of that fight or flight mechanism. Right. So, we're fighting cancer and we're battling against cancer and, we're going to kill the cancer. And,
yeah.
And if you look at that from that... the idea that we're trying to not engage the fight or flight mechanism, it seems kind of counterproductive to me.
Right.
The actual healing states that we're in, your healing occurs when we are at peace and when you are calm and experiencing love.
Right. Yeah, you can't fight fire with fire.
No, right. It doesn't seem to work.
Yeah.
So,
and also for me, too, from my understanding, cancer is something that's kind of in all of us, right? It's just a matter of if it mutates and grows. So why are we fighting something that is inherently part of our DNA? It's like, that seems like we're going to lose that battle if we're just all about fighting it, right? And all we see with cancer, organizations, and I know a lot of their hearts are in the right place and they're doing their best, but you're right. It is about, let's end this, let's end cancer, the fight to end cancer. And it's like, well, what if we just decided to accept and work with it, and accept that it's a part of us, right? Is that kind of, that's where I feel like I'm at in my,
it's a, journey with it. It sounds a little weird, I know, but, cancer has not been 100% bad for me. I have come to recognize that my cancer has taught me a lot of lessons
right.
that would have been otherwise impossible for me to learn.
Right.
And I think part of my cancer experience is specifically to learn those lessons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Focusing on things that are just not important in life.
No doubt. Yeah, I guess a lot of mundane things go out the window when someone, when you get the news and the information that you've received.
Yeah.
So what what kind of dropped? Like what became irrelevant? What were the things that you saw in life that maybe, you were doing that you were just like, why? Like why? What's the point of continuing this?
As positive and upbeat as I am, I'm no different from anybody else. My head can get stuck in unimportant stuff.
Of course.
You're human. Mundane crap. Yeah. Like getting mad at somebody in traffic, right? I'm learning that a lot of the tension and things that we feel on a day-to-day basis is really just a matter of perspectives.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's somebody driving slow in front of you.
Yeah.
You're going to get mad at that idiot and, cut it out.
Yeah.
But it's really a matter of your perspective. Mm. So what if that was, your aging mom in the car in front of you?
Right. Yeah.
Whose eyesight isn't so great and she's afraid to go any faster. Or, what if it's your teenage daughter who's just learning how to drive?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You don't know what the story is on the other side. Right. It's funny how, when we're in that, and I think getting angry at someone in traffic is a great example of being in that like fight or flight stress state, right? Mm-hmm. You have no interest in any empathy or compassion for what the other person is going through. You just kind of jump to the worst case scenario. Like this person's an idiot. They don't know what they're doing. Like, get out of my way.
We've gotten to the point where we just attack on reflex, needlessly. Mm.
So this, like, this perspective that you have now, is that, like, I'm guessing it's kind of been a gradual shift. Did you have this perspective before your diagnosis?
Before my diagnosis, I was positive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I try to look on the bright side of things and try to find the good in people. Mm. It in some ways was you know, academic for me.
Right.
The way that a lot of things were academic for me. Whereas now it's more a part of who I am.
Right.
You know, it's not something that I have to think about.
Right.
You know, compassion for another person, you know, isn't something that I have to stop mm-hmm. and consider mm-hmm. and, you know, pull myself back.
Right.
It's just
that's your operating
it's just
state.
The natural way of things.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've reprogrammed yourself to just live with empathy and compassion.
And the empathy is something that the psilocybin therapy has definitely amplified for.
Wow.
You know, being able to appreciate the feelings of others,
right.
and you know, really view the world from their perspective. Mm-hmm. Is a lot more second nature.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into that now. You've got
sure.
your you, yeah you've August August of 2020. When did you receive
August the 4th, 2020? Yeah,
August 4th, 2020. That's when you received the exemption, or is that when you did your first session?
Received the exemption on the 4th,
yeah.
And I did my first session on the 12th.
Oh wow, you're right in. You're ready to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. And so at this point, had you been working with Therasil? And just for our
right.
listeners again, Therasil is a organization out of Victoria that is helping people get like Section 56 exemptions, also practitioners and counselors, mm-hmm. so they can
yes.
work with patients.
And their patient advocacy group, and right now they're expanding to try to also get new legislation put in place,
yeah.
so that instead of the current backlog of people who are trying to get these Section 56s, we're trying to medicalize
mm.
the use of psilocybin in the same way that initially cannabis was a medicalized
right.
substance.
Yeah.
So. You know, instead of me having to go to my member of parliament or the minister of health and present all of my medical information to
right.
them, and
as
you know,
an individual,
please can I have this exemption
mm-hmm.
because I'm dying? You know, this is something that is, in my opinion, best between a doctor and a patient.
Right.
The same as any other medical condition.
Absolutely.
You know, I. In my perfect world, I would not be laundering my dirty laundry like this out in public.
Yeah,
you know,
no
this
doubt.
This is not my ideal way of doing things.
Yeah,
I have anxiety about dying.
Mm.
I don't have anxiety about speaking in public.
Yeah, good.
And
well, what you're doing is
you
going to help a lot of people. Sharing your story and sharing the roadmap of everything that you've gone through and kind of, you know, there's a lot of people that I don't really know what to do that are like day to day, every day in Canada. I'm sure there's someone that's getting that same story from an oncologist, like, okay, well, we've tried everything. We don't know what else to do. And then
I would have to think many.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, and it kind of sounded like you were speaking, like you're working with Therasil. Are you actually active in working with them?
Well, I'm not a member of Therasil.
Right.
Therasil has been very helpful in helping me to get my exemption.
Right.
And I am
awesome.
In turn trying to help other people who are going through Therasil. Therasil and I have a common goal of making this psilocybin-assisted therapy available to more Canadians, not just for people who have terminal cancer,
mm.
but for, you know, so many other conditions
right.
that are just as serious.
Absolutely.
You know, ALS or treatment-resistant depression,
mm-hmm.
PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
There's addictions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a large number of conditions that the psilocybin therapy has a track record of being effective for.
Absolutely.
And so because I have benefited from this treatment, I sort of feel like it's my responsibility to give back. Mm.
Probably feels pretty good, too, knowing that you're out there, you know. Is it?
Well,
Honestly, I
like to think that what I'm doing is going to make a difference at some point.
It absolutely is.
Yep.
Yeah, you can rest assured on that one. So keep going, man. Don't stop.
I'm pesky and annoying, and I yap a lot.
Perfect.
So I'm hoping that at some point the people who make these decisions will have enough information, mm-hmm. and have enough. I know that they have been presented with the wording for potential legislation, mm-hmm. from Therasil and from other groups,
yeah.
that are based on the cannabis laws that were initially put out there, and I recognize that they're probably not perfect,
right?
But you know, it's like a relationship. You know, if you wait until you find the perfect person, you're gonna die alone.
You know, at
some
analogy.
Point, you need to find something that you can work with,
right?
And you know, you use that as a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a couple of mechanisms for legislation that are perfectly reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Using the cannabis laws as a basis, that's a really good one.
Right.
Using the MAID system is another one.
What's that?
That I think is reasonable.
What's the MAID?
So MAID is, in Canada, it is legal to request medical assistance to end your
mm-hmm.
life. If, so, you know, if I decided that I'm in too much pain, you know, my cancer has no further treatment options, you know, I just
You're
can't
done.
Handle
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
It's,
quality of life
it's legal
gone.
For me to fill out some
yep.
paperwork, and a doctor will help me end my suffering.
Right. And that's fairly new in Canada too, right? Isn't that 2016 that euthanasia assisted suicide?
Yeah, I don't know the date on it myself, but it is pretty recent.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, the goal of the MAID system is to alleviate suffering.
Right.
And right now, it has only one mechanism for doing
right.
so, which is to end your life.
Right.
So if I have the right to end my suffering by killing myself,
right.
why would I not have the right to end my suffering in a way that improves my quality of life or what I have left?
That's the question. That's powerful. That's huge. Why wouldn't we? Right?
You know, I don't see any difference, honestly.
No, me
I mean, if you're going to allow me to die, why won't you allow me to try something that's going to potentially make the rest of my days less anxious,
yeah.
less depressed?
And the impact on your, you know, the people, like just us having this conversation right now, the fact that you've gone through this and now you're helping other people get involved. You talk about your perspective shift towards empathy and compassion. To me, it sounds like that's a much better thing that we could be focusing on, because the ripple effect of that, right, is huge. It's massive, of having more people like yourself out there sharing their story, being compassionate, caring for others.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all for it.
If my story were unique in this,
right.
you know, that would be something. But, you know, my story is really not unique.
Right.
I've had a chance to speak with other people who have had Section 56 exemptions, and you know, many of them have experienced a significant improvement in their quality of life.
Right.
Now, at the same time, some of them have you know, gone on to use the MAID service, and some of them have
right.
let nature take its course.
Right.
But
they had the choice.
They had the choice, and
that's the big thing.
You know, I really believe that in talking to them, the amount that the psilocybin-assisted therapy improved their life was so worth it.
Right. Yeah. And when you look at the studies around the safety compared to other drugs that we use. Psilocybin.
The safety margins for psilocybin are so high that they sound ridiculous.
I know, it's true.
I mean,
yeah, it's
the toxicity
it's got
levels
caffeine,
for psilocybin, you would,
everything, right?
You would have to literally eat pounds,
right.
pounds,
an impossible
of
amount
mushrooms.
Of mushrooms to have any sort of complications.
And the nature of psilocybin, the mushrooms in a natural form. Mm. I mean, if you tried to eat pounds of it, it induces nausea.
Right.
You would throw it up.
Yeah, there's a counter effect.
Couldn't
right?
do it.
And there's a certain point where the receptors for psilocybin. I'm kind of butchering this, but if you go over a certain amount, like, isn't there kind of like a maximum where?
It's I think what you're talking about. It has a diminishing return.
There you go.
So if I took psilocybin today, it would have a maximum effect.
Right.
If I took it again tomorrow, it would have less of an effect.
Gotcha.
And less until it really didn't have any effect on
right.
me. So it's sort of a self-correcting drug.
Yeah.
You can't abuse it in the way that other drugs are, like opiates, for example.
Right. Where you build up tolerance, you have to take more and more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, with psilocybin or some of the other drugs that are in that same class,
mm-hmm.
I believe LSD is another one
right.
that is a similar molecule, and the continued use of that has a reduced effect. So
right.
That's where they have microdosing protocols,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Mm-hmm.
Not something that I have done myself, but something that I have most certainly come across in my research,
yeah.
where you have to have these gaps
yes.
when you're taking it, otherwise you build up a tolerance to it and it ceases to be an effective
yeah.
medication for you.
Yeah, so it's almost like an anti-addictive property, right? If you just completely lose
well,
all effect.
I mean, it's yeah,
you're not anti-addictive, but definitely not addictive.
Well, I would honestly go so far as to say kind of anti-addictive.
Wow.
It is literally used to treat addictions.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Let's get to the day, August 12th. This is, this is during the pandemic, kind of like summer one of the pandemic. So you're in Saskatoon. Theracil's based in Victoria, BC here.
It is.
Did you travel to them? Did they travel to you? Because you did it in person. Right?
Was
it a Zoom therapy session?
I was extremely fortunate. Yeah. Yeah. Take some mushrooms and throw on Zoom.
Yeah, it's probably not a good idea.
I was very fortunate that Dr. Bruce Tobin is one of the founders of Theracil.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for a therapist who was experienced in the use of psilocybin therapy. Extremely difficult to find in Canada because it's illegal.
Yep.
And, of course, not so many therapists who are willing to say, yeah, I know about
mm-hmm.
that. Dr. Tobin was one of those therapists.
Good man.
And to my great fortune, he volunteered to come here to Saskatoon to do my session with me.
That's amazing. What's Dr. Tobin's experience in working with psychedelic therapy?
Well,
that's extensive.
I would not want to butcher his credentials.
Okay.
But he is most certainly experienced in both the use of psychedelics in a therapeutic setting and as a therapist in general.
Yeah.
So
okay.
He fortunately has both of those things that he's bringing to the table.
Yeah.
And I am completely unqualified to tell you about his qualifications.
No, that's okay. We'll have an article about him in our upcoming newsletter, talking about him for sure, so people can do a true deep dive, and it won't be on you to describe that.
I can tell you that he is very good at what he does.
Mm.
He has the approach that he uses for the psilocybin therapy itself is kind of a hands-off
okay.
therapy.
Okay.
So where a traditional therapy, you would expect, you know, a therapist asks you questions and leads you to places and such. Actual psilocybin therapy isn't like that. Mm-hmm. It's an extremely introspective process, but it's more than just, you know, popping some mushrooms and going on a trip.
Right.
The intention of the process is really, really important, and it's something that a lot of people leave out when you just, you know, I hear about people using mushrooms recreationally, mm-hmm. and they say, you know, it didn't do anything for me, you know, therapeutically, I'm still, you know, just as messed up as I ever
right.
was. And it's really not surprising.
Yeah, of course.
Because, you know, if you are not using it in the proper context mm-hmm. and the setting and the intention, then, you know, of course, you're not going to get a good result out of
mm-hmm.
it. I mean, how could you expect to?
Yeah.
So prior to actually doing a session with the psilocybin, there are a number of therapy sessions to establish exactly those things.
Mm.
Your expectations, what you would like to get out of it,
right.
Trust with your therapist,
of course.
The types of things that you'll likely encounter during a session,
right.
You know, the absolute essentialness of surrendering to the experience.
Yeah, not resisting.
So, you know,
very important.
If you are having a challenging session and you fight it, you are going to have a bad day.
Absolutely.
You know,
the bad trips that we all hear
about. The best
thing
that you can do is to embrace what's happening to you and go with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then it allows the medicine to actually do what it's there to do, right?
Yeah. So, you know, instead of staying wrapped up in your anxiety or depression or whatever it is you're dealing with, it allows you to get your ego out of the way
mm-hmm.
and actually connect the I can deal with that
right.
parts of your brain to the you know, the previous
right.
I don't want to deal with this part
right.
You know, I
do you see it?
I think our brains are really good at iconifying things
uh-huh.
I guess would be I'm a computer guy
yeah,
so
yeah.
I think of things in largely computer terms
uh-huh.
And, you know, in the same way that you have an icon on your desktop
yeah.
for your email,
yeah.
it's not actually your email. It's just something that represents email.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So our brains deal in symbols and icons very much the same way.
Right.
So in your mind, you have got a location there where you put the stuff you don't want to deal with.
Uh-huh.
And I would call that the I'm out box.
Right.
You know?
yeah.
And every time you put something in there, you are reinforcing this neural pathway
mm.
that says that if I don't want to deal with something,
yep.
over it goes in the I'm out box.
Yeah.
And when you have a psilocybin session and it takes the default network offline, so
yep.
the default mode network being the circuits, I guess you could call it the traffic cop.
Okay, yeah.
Traffic lights.
Yep.
You know, that is what determines how things communicate in your mind
yes.
and your default ways of dealing with stuff.
Yeah.
So you take psilocybin, it reduces the blood flow to those parts of the
mm-hmm.
brain, it physically puts that part to sleep.
Right.
So now there isn't a default pathway that says, you know, this is how we deal with this anxious situation.
Right. Yeah, it's like the logic board is gone, right? Like it no longer has that programming of how we've always done things. Therefore,
mm-hmm.
this is what we do with this new thing. Like your,
it's like a layer of fresh snow.
Yes,
right?
I love that. Yeah, so new tracks can be formed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so back to this iconification
mm-hmm.
of things, you know, in your mind, there's going to be something that represents, you know, the problem or danger or something bad. And for some people, that's going to be, you know, childhood memories.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, that's going to be getting eaten by a bear. You know, it's not actually being eaten by a bear. It's
right.
just something that your mind is trying to say, hey, this is danger and I don't like it.
Right.
And,
avoid.
You know.
Yeah.
But the important part of the psilocybin session is when a challenge like that comes up, you have to embrace it. So, you know, if you're going to be eaten by the bear, you let yourself be eaten by the bear.
Right.
You know, if there's a, you know, a scary staircase that you don't want to go explore, I mean,
you have to
go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, the act of doing that. So the courage to allow that to happen is always rewarded. You are connecting the I'm out box to the I can deal with this parts of your brain.
Yes.
And it makes this new pathway in there.
Yeah. And so working with Bruce, when you, let's use the staircase as an example, you're in your experience, you hit your staircase, you feel that resistance to want to go up and see, you know, what's at the top. What kind of happened there with the therapist, with Bruce? Was there, is that where he kind of like guided you, and did you say something to him of like, could he sense that you were like in a fearful state maybe? Or resistive state? Because there's obviously a breakthrough moment, right?
Well, I think I might be a little different from a lot of people.
Okay.
So, psilocybin experience is like one of those revolving doors on a hotel, right? You know, those automatic doors?
Yeah, I know the ones.
If you step into one of those, if you don't have any intention or if you have resistance, that door is going to hit you on the butt and you're going to have an experience anyways.
Right. Or if you do something stupid
for
and
me,
two people get into the same section together. That was a weird experience.
For myself, I was very, very prepared for the experience. And I had a very definite intention, and I had, I believe, a very strong understanding. So, you know, I was more pushing on the door.
Right. Yeah, you're ready.
I didn't hit any moments of resistance.
Right. Okay.
For me, every part of that experience was really serene and peaceful and reassuring.
Yeah.
So where I had really expected to have something traumatic and scary,
right,
I didn't have any of that.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe because of it, what you've been through for the 4 years prior to it.
Yeah.
Right?
I honestly feel like it's what I needed.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I was looking for answers to things like, you know, how can I exist, you know, after I die if there's no me?
Right. Whoa.
And, you know, I didn't really have a concept of what a consciousness without the personality would be.
Right. And now, do you? Can you share with us like your a new perspective that you have?
For me, so when you take psilocybin in the amounts that I take,
which is
and
how
that
much?
Default mode network shuts down. That was 7 grams.
Okay.
Yeah. You will experience what they call an ego death, and you know, it wasn't something that I resisted at all. It was, for me, just a change of state.
Did you know that you were experiencing the ego death while it was happening, like in real time? Did you have a thought during the therapy session? You're like, oh, this is it. Or was it kind of like a reflection afterwards?
I think had I stopped to think about what was going on, that would have been more anxiety-inducing.
Right. Just like purely explorative.
Yeah, I was really just pushing to see what the experience was. And so instead of a panic thinking that, you know, I'm ceasing to exist,
right,
I just became something else.
Wow.
So without that, you know, really uncomfortable middle part.
Yeah. Yeah, the not knowing part.
Yeah, so I have heard so many stories and read so many articles of other people's experiences where they talk about, you know, the thought that, oh no, I've taken too much and I'm actually going to die, and, you know,
yeah.
And that never actually entered my mind.
Huh. And that's the resistive state, right? Like if you get to that point where you're like, uh-oh, I made a mistake, this is bad, something really bad's going to happen, that's when people are putting that wall up. And they're not willing to go up the staircase, right?
Well, it's where there's this divide that it's either going to become a positive experience, right, with some courage to go through that, yeah, or you're going to resist it, and it's going to be something that causes trauma to you.
Right. Yeah. So in your perspective, then, like this ego death that we all hear so much about, during a psychedelic therapy session, what is that exactly? Like I see it as, it's like the separation of the self. It's kind of like you split into two almost. This is just my kind of thing. Well, is like, then I'm objectively looking at, you know, Brett the human, right? And like everything that Brett's been through, and I like to look at it as a way of, you know, like a friend's in a really bad relationship, right? And mm-hmm. you know exactly what they should do, but you have no idea like what you should do in your own relationship. It's like you're too close, right? Like you're too close to the center where, that's kind of the way I see it. It's almost you get step outside of yourself to have that separation. What's your kind of perspective on that?
Boy, my world gets a little weird when we get into that territory.
Cool, let's get weird.
In the same way that you know, your liver and your kidneys filter your blood, you know, your eyes filter the magnetic spectrum, mm-hmm. your ears filter the vibrations in the air. I have sort of come to the conclusion that your brain is a bit of a reality filter.
Okay.
And the way that you experience that reality in this filter is largely determined by that default mode network.
Right.
So it's built up over your lifetime. Yeah. It generates your ego, and it separates me from not me.
Right.
And that's the whole job of your ego, is to say, you know, this is me, this is not me, and then you determine whether that's a good thing or not a good thing.
Right.
And it generates feelings mm-hmm. and stuff. So when something like a psychedelic comes along and wipes that out, you no longer have that filter of
right.
what is me and what is not me,
right.
and what is good and what is not good. And when you no longer have those judgments
yeah.
and assessments,
yeah.
then
just a whole new world of possibilities.
What you use to define yourself as is has an opportunity to completely change.
Wow, well said. Huh. Okay. So, how long was that first session? I think I read the seven. Did it take 7 hours? I don't want to say that you were
in
the session for.
Yeah, so I took the first dose at about 11:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And I would consider myself to be pretty grounded again sometime between 5 and 6 p.m. that night.
Wow.
So.
And were you laying down? Did you have music, blindfold?
Yep.
All
so working with the protocol that they used at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's headphones with the music playing and a blindfold, and after I took my psilocybin dosage, I was doing a lot of meditating. It's something I do a lot of.
Oh, awesome.
I meditate at least an hour a day every day, and that's something else that I would suggest is helpful for somebody who is considering this therapy, because the meditative state definitely improves the transition while the drug is kicking in, because there is definitely a come up anxiety
yep.
that people will experience.
Yep.
And I mean, it is a drug that has physical effects as well.
Absolutely.
You know, it isn't just, you know, well, you know, unicorns and rainbows.
I spent pretty much the
entire time trying to regulate my body temperature because I was, you know, constantly chills and sweats and you know, quite a bit of nausea involved in that. Mm. You know, it's something I experience on a daily basis anyways,
right.
But most certainly enhanced by that. So it's, you know, not something to do lightly.
Yeah.
It has definitely physical aspects to it as well.
Right. Which is why it's so important for people to have access to do it in a proper setting with, you know, a certified therapist or counselor that's been there before.
For sure.
That's walked the walk, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's why I'm, you know, so much on the promoting it as a medicalization side, not just flat out legalization.
Right.
You know, don't get me wrong. I believe that this is something that everybody should have the right to use.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would very much like them to be using it in a safe, responsible way that, you know, is going to be helpful, not harmful.
Yeah, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that, that the medicalization is the first step. You know, we can worry about, tripping recreationally later. But I'm worried that if it goes too far in that direction with recreational use and a lot more, you know, kind of what happened in the 70s, right? A lot of bad stories seem to pop up because people maybe aren't doing it in the best settings. We could see another big setback. And there's such a huge opportunity right now in Canada specifically to get this moving forward in a proper direction and set the course for, you know, the next several decades of our current mental health crisis that we're in right now.
It's with the pandemic. Mm. I mean, we have not seen the tip of
the
impact of mental health that this is going to have on you know, thousands and thousands of Canadians.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm feeling. You know,
of course.
It's been a weird year and a half, man.
I have not talked to anybody who has not been affected in some way by this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so strange. I mean, like, my family's all in Ontario. I'm going back to see my dad soon here, but even just with like the Delta variant and like, you know, my sister has young kids and she's still not comfortable with me coming to see her and the kids, and I totally get that. And at the same time, it's been like, you know, it's been 2 years since I've seen my niece and nephew, and it's hard. It's a hard thing to kind of to wrap my mind around that, like, it's potentially very unsafe for me to travel through an international airport and then immediately go and see. So the psychological even just stress from something like that, that's a grateful situation for me to have, you know, the ability to travel and see people, but it does things to you. It's all got an impact on the psyche.
Even fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to get past these, you know, mental hurdles.
Totally. And yeah, I just feel like we're getting new information every day and we don't seem to really know or understand, and I don't expect anybody to fully have this thing figured out. But it all feels like we're living in a bit of a limbo state, which is a tough place to be. So can we get into some of your like personal relationships if you're comfortable going there?
Sure.
Yeah, so like you have two kids, is that correct?
I do.
Two kids,
yes.
And then a wife as well.
Yep, we've been, I guess we're coming up on 27 years now.
Ooh, congrats.
That's a
while. A good haul.
it's better than some, and feels like yesterday, honestly.
Oh, right on. I love hearing that. So how is it, can you kind of take us through that experience of just your personal relationships kind of back from diagnosis? I remember it just, you know, being extremely difficult when my mom was diagnosed and kind of just, you know, everybody working together, and then to just understand the impact of the situation and filter through the information that professionals are all telling us, and just trying to keep our sanity. Yeah. And kind of like, you know, how that's shifted. I'm so much closer with my dad now, since that unfortunate situation. It really brought us, you talked a little bit about like the silver linings of cancer before, and I'm closer with my dad and my sister now because of what happened with my mom, so very grateful for that. But tell me about it.
Yeah, boy, you know, if you haven't noticed, I am pretty positive. And you know, in spite of the fact that virtually everybody in my children's life who has gotten cancer having already passed away, for me, I think my kids sort of think about my cancer the way that you would think about having a cold.
Right. Wow. It's just something
because I've been I've been dealing with it fairly successfully up to this point.
Right.
So, whether that's fair or not fair for them, you know, I would prefer not to put them through the type of emotional stress now than I would have to. You know, my kids are on the autism spectrum, so for them, they have some difficulty dealing with social things.
Right.
You know, my son in particular has trouble, with anxiety himself.
Right.
Autism is something that makes the world a very confusing place to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And adding my terminal cancer to the mix of things that he has to deal with.
Right. He doesn't need that weight.
It's not a burden I would put on him.
Right. And so does that drive your has that driven your positivity for your whole life, just to show up in a way that, you know, you're just being a strong father, right?
I would very much like my kids to go through life with the attitude that problems are things that you can deal with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I would prefer them to look for opportunities, look for the bright side of things, wherever possible. It's, I think, what anybody would want for their children is for them to be happy.
Yeah.
Having cancer is something that has, I think, certainly improved my patience. Autism is not something that is the easiest to deal with as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to just communicate simple things can be so challenging.
Yeah.
And when you get into things that young adults deal with, and both of my children are now, becoming young adults.
Are they in their late teens, early 20s? Is that right?
Early 20s now. So you now have extra life things are coming onto the plate. Learning how to be more patient and understanding and more empathetic, I think, has certainly improved my relationship with my son in particular.
Oh, awesome.
It's always been difficult for me to fully embrace, you know, everybody has hopes and dreams for the children, and I'm no different.
Yeah.
I would certainly like life to be easier for him. But it's helped me to accept that he's going through life on hard mode.
Right.
And I guess...
So are you, though.
My role is just to try to give him the best tools that I can to deal with that.
Right. That's beautiful. Yeah. Okay. So we've kind of gone through the whole experience. Have you done more than one session?
I've done two.
Two sessions. When was the second one?
Second one was in November.
Okay.
After the first one. So, I did my first session. I had very good results out of it. Mm. I was very good for a couple of months. And my scales that I would use to measure that would be how quiet my brain was.
Right.
You know, I generally have a pretty busy head.
Yeah.
I'm interested in a lot of things. Yeah. I have a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
And when you are in a state of anxiety with, you know, existential dread, mm-hmm. the majority of what that is busy with is crap you can't do anything about.
Yes, so, of course.
You know, it's these ideas, for example, like I'm not going to be there for my family when they need me someday.
Right, completely out of your control. You know,
Yeah, you know, I can't do anything about that. So I was starting to get a little bit more of that creeping back in after a couple of months. And so I decided to do another session then.
Right.
And, you know, that definitely was exactly what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
It for me, quieted things back down again.
Wow. So it was about a 3-month gap then, is that right? 2.5, 3 months?
Yeah.
And so what was the integrative process in those 2.5 to 3 months? Were you working with some of the other counselors at Therasil? Because I believe have you worked with Natasha? Natasha might be on the podcast. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I've I have not worked with Natasha in a therapeutic capacity.
Okay.
I've worked exclusively with Bruce in that capacity, but I also have a good friend here who is a hospice volunteer. Actually, he was originally a hospice volunteer with my father-in-law.
Okay.
Back in 2019, my mother-in-law passed away unexpectedly, and my father-in-law, who also had stage 4 cancer, was not able to take care of himself.
Oh, man.
So he moved in here with us and had a hospice volunteer who was keeping him company and helping him deal with his grief and things.
Right.
And after my father-in-law passed away, John, who I had been visiting with and got along with very well, he became my hospice volunteer.
Okay.
So we connected very well, and he has experience using ayahuasca for his own personal journey, and he's a retired addictions counselor, and so
good guy to have around.
Yeah. So between talking with Bruce and talking with John about the experience and things, that was really where my integration came into play.
Yeah, it's a good support.
And you know, for probably 6 months after the experience, you still get these what I would call aha moments.
Yeah.
It's one of the interesting things about the psilocybin therapy is, you know, you get these, forehead slappingly simple things that have this profound meaning to you.
So simple. It's amazing how simple it all really is, and that perspective shift when you feel it, right?
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, you know, some of the things that have come out of this session, you know, are... to say them, they sound, you know, trite and simple.
Yeah.
But the nature of a psilocybin therapy experience, I tell people that it can't really be described in any other way but spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And not spiritual in a religious sense, because that's not what it was for me. It may be for other people, but not for me. For me, it was spiritual in... being able to understand my place in the universe.
Hmm.
And for me, that was very comforting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have any doubts about, my role in things and what I'm supposed to be doing here.
Oh, man, that's a peaceful place to operate from. I can't say that I've gotten there yet, but... yeah, that trust that you know exactly who you are and what you're up to, right? There's a lot of there's a lot of solace in that.
It makes my world feel less out of control than what cancer was initially doing for me.
Right.
I've got that kind of an anecdote that I came up with right after my session.
Right.
So the day after I did my psilocybin, Dr. Tobin asked me what the difference was for
Yeah.
me. And, I explained to him that, getting the cancer diagnosis really feels like you're being dragged behind a horse. You're out of control.
Right.
You're headed towards a cliff.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. And every part of the experience is awful.
Right.
Following my psilocybin experience, it to me feels more like I'm riding the horse. So, we're still got a destination.
Right.
There's still stuff happening.
Yeah.
But
there's still a bit of a wild beast that, is on the journey with you, but you're slightly more in control.
It sounds silly, but it feels more like I'm able to enjoy the scenery. I'm able to enjoy the journey.
That's beautiful.
As opposed to just every part of it sucking.
Right.
Now I can see that there's parts of this that have benefit and aren't so bad.
Man, that's amazing. Oh man, getting emotional here. to think that there's medicine out there that's illegal, that allows people in your situation to experience that perspective shift. Man, what a powerful thing, and it's why it's so important that we have to keep having these conversations and doing this work.
That's the whole reason why I keep trying to make people understand.
Yeah, and you're doing a great job, man. That analogy was amazing. I can even resonate to being dragged behind the horse from the perspective of watching my mother go through it, right? We didn't know what to do. It was just helpless. That's incredible, man.
That helplessness is the worst part of the cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
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 There's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are able to embrace that there's nothing you can do.
Yes.
And instead of spending all of your energy fighting what you can't fight.
Right.
And you can then take that same energy and put it into spending time with my family.
Yeah.
We just got back from taking a little vacation.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I saw your Facebook post there. You took a week off, or you took a cycle off from chemo to go on vacation, right?
Yeah.
Worth it.
There's no way I would have been able to do that, a year ago.
Right.
My anxiety would not have let me do that prior to psilocybin.
Oh, man.
And I have realized that,
what's important, right?
Is that going to shorten my lifespan any? Probably not.
Right.
And the amount of memories that I generate with my family, priceless.
Man, that's it. Wow. That's very cool, man. That's very cool. Okay, so what do people do? All these people that are in the same situation as you, I know that there's this big push with that Theracell's working on right now for their summer of advocacy to open up more exemptions, Section 56, or just kind of, I think their ultimate goal is just to push it right through so people can just go
change
and access.
The regs. Yeah.
So
honestly,
what should people
from
do?
From my perspective, I think the best thing that people can do, people like myself, who have a real reason for wanting this therapy or have a loved one who does.
Right.
There is an election coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's coming. And I would very much like to see this as at least one election issue.
Right.
Contact your MP and let them know how you feel about it.
Yeah.
Let them know that you are in favor of medicalizing the use of this therapy.
Yes.
And that you would like to see this as an option that Canadians can use instead of just killing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How can that even compare?
No. But to use that structure is huge, like you said, right? To use the main structure that's already pushed through not that many years ago. That's the roadmap, right?
There's, you know, like I say, there's a couple of very reasonable and easy things that could be implemented right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be literally the stroke of a pen for somebody,
mm-hmm.
and the suffering of thousands of Canadians would start to be alleviated.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just have to start.
And we don't have a choice either. I mean, we touched on the mental health crisis that we're coming into here, right? Like, I don't know, what's a more important issue if we want to build up future generations and get out of this toxic negative cycle of poor mental health? We got to do something here. But it starts with, I guess, people opening up to their minds to working with psychedelics. Because there's a lot of deprogramming that needs to be done there too, right? There's a ton of fear in that system, in that world.
It's why I try to emphasize to people, like, I mean, I am literally just an average 54-year-old computer guy with a family.
Right.
You know, there is nothing whatsoever that's special about me. And if this type of therapy can work for me, I know it will work for other people.
Absolutely.
I mean, I am very boring and ordinary. There is no reason why there's anything special about my treatment at all. And there isn't.
Right. Yeah. And that's it. People just have to be willing to take that first step, you know, and give it a try. So, I mean, I can't express enough, Thomas, how important it is. There's like, you've convinced, I didn't need to be convinced, but if I was being completely objective and pretending like I knew nothing about this space, everything that you just talked about, your perspective shifts, how you see your relationship with your kids, how you're choosing to spend your time now, even though you're still facing this terminal situation. I don't know how anybody could listen to this and not be convinced. So to at least give it a try. So just keep going. And like, where are you at right now in your like, you know, you've kind of told us a lot, but like, you know, we've kind of come all the way through and now we're at, you know, August 11th, 2021. I think that's the date today. Right. So
yeah,
you're sitting here with me, you're talking about it. We're going to make some real positive change and effect with this, this conversation. And spread the word. But what's next for Thomas?
Well, it is now more than a year since I got my exemption, and my Section 56 had a 1-year time limit on it.
Oh shit! So it's illegal for you to do psilocybin therapy again.
It is now, even though I have been approved, and nothing else in my life is different.
Huh.
It is now illegal for me to do that same treatment that I know is effective. So
what?
You know,
that's
in,
so ridiculous.
In another 3 months, if I find my anxiety creeping back up on me, I can't have treatment.
Right, you'd be breaking the law.
I'm just like everybody else.
Yeah,
I would be. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And that to me has a certain amount of insanity to it.
Absolutely.
You know, I have stage 4 cancer, and I have been fortunate enough that I have actually lived another year.
Right.
But because I've lived another year,
you're being penalized.
I have outlived my exemption.
Yeah, being penalized for. Oh man, that's. I had no idea there was a time limit, that there was an expiry on the exemptions. I agree with your insanity comment. That's completely. That's actually a little bit sickening to think that you would give a time limit to someone with an all, like, you already have a, you know, time limit, right?
Yeah.
to give you another one is a. It's like granting a positive thing, but it's also kind of like a little bit of an underhanded. But
I mean, if you looked at any other treatment for the same condition, you know, depression or anxiety, and if you went to your doctor and your doctor says you got 1 year to get better,
right? Yeah, when we're taking your SSRIs away, you got 1 year.
Yeah.
If you don't have it figured out by then, you're on your own. It's crazy.
It doesn't even fit into the current model, you know.
Oh,
so,
man.
So, something has to change.
What?
And that's why I'm so very motivated
to
try to encourage our legislators to look at just the insanity of that whole process.
Why do you think that is? What do you think the logic is? Did you get any answers from anyone around the expiry?
You know, honestly,
it's just for personal use, right? Like, that's all the exemption is. It's just to say that you're allowed to personally use a controlled substance.
In a controlled environment with a medical practitioner.
Right.
Yeah, so there's definitely conditions
right.
associated with the usage of it, which I think are important.
Yes.
Again, I'm all for the medicalization, not for the the free-for-all.
Right.
But I don't know whether they actually expect that a single treatment is all a person is ever going to need for their lifetime, even though the studies do say that 80% effective after a single use, that is a fact.
Right.
And of those 20% that it isn't effective after one, they do have more benefit from a second dose. I think it's reasonable to expect that people are going to need more than one session.
Yeah. Traumas run deep.
Why would you expect to take one aspirin and never get a headache for the rest
Absolutely.
Of your life?
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's not a magic pill. It's just an access.
It's very good.
It's very good, and it's an access to, you know, a new perspective that helps you, you know, do some different kind of work or do some better work, maybe.
I don't know whether they had the expectation that I wouldn't need any more or because I'm stage four, whether I wouldn't live long enough for it to be an issue.
Yeah.
That is also a possibility.
Right.
I mean, you know, most people with my particular kind of cancer do not have my kind of longevity.
Right.
You know, I've managed to live, you know, 5.5 years with stage four cancer.
Yeah.
And that's not in remission. That's active stage four cancer.
That's incredible.
So
I think your positivity and your mindset has a lot to do with it, man.
I think it helps.
Yeah, it definitely does.
I would have to say that, you know, being able to get rid of the anxiety and being able to tone down that fight or flight.
Yeah.
That's a contributing factor to being able to deal with this better.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Gabor Mate's work at all?
I don't believe I am.
Okay. He's a psychotherapist that works out of Vancouver. He's worked with like the homeless community and the addictions community in the east side of Vancouver for a lot of years. I've been watching. There's a great documentary. I think it'd be amazing for everybody to watch this. It's called The Wisdom of Trauma.
I have seen that.
You have seen it. There you go. So that's Gabor Mate in that movie.
Okay.
Yeah. And he also has another book called When the Body Says No, The Hidden Cost of Stress, which is really incredible. And I'm hearing it a lot in this conversation as well, the link between mental stress, anxiety, depression, and how that manifests as illness in our body. And just to hear you with your perspective shifts and, you know, your 5.5 years and you're kind of blowing all expectations out of the water of, I just don't think that should be overlooked, that the ability to have a positive mental attitude and live with empathy and compassion, how important that is for physical health and longevity, and for us to be working on it, everyone to be working on it before they get, you know, a terminal.
Something like what I've got.
Right, exactly. I don't know, man.
Life is an incredible journey, and if you can go through it in a state of happiness as opposed to, oh, damn, I woke up again this morning, you know?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we want to try to help people get to that state where, you know, life is a beautiful, amazing experience that it is?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we just need to keep, that's why you got to keep telling people about this. We'll just keep talking about it. And, you know, one by one, people will lose their fear. They'll hear more stories. It'll become more normalized. And It's one thing that I've experienced myself. The first time I took a larger dose of psilocybin, I was terrified. And after the fact, or I should say during the trip, I wasn't. The fear went away, and it hasn't come back. I'm no longer afraid of, I'm maybe afraid of some other psychedelics that I haven't tried before because I'm not used to the medicine. But psilocybin was very interesting to just see. There's actually nothing to be afraid of with that medicine. If, like you said, you get into it, you use it, you accept it, you don't resist, and there's just so much good that comes out of it.
Yeah, it's almost like a metaphor for a lot of things in life. Mm. It's the resistance and the struggle that causes us the most anguish, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think we just did about an hour and a half, Thomas. That was amazing.
How about that?
Yeah, that flew by. It was amazing talking to you, man. I'm so grateful for this conversation and you taking the time to spend it here with us. And I just want to see you keep going, you know, hit that 6-year, 7-year, 8-year. We need Thomas around talking about this to get everybody else on board. So keep doing your thing, man.
Well, I can't say that I would be sad to see that.
No, definitely not. All right, man. Well, we'll just end it there. And I wish you all the best. And we'll definitely stay in touch. This is not our last conversation. So I'm excited to see.
Sounds excellent.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what else we can talk about and work on together.
There's hopefully going to be some interesting things coming up in the fall here. I'm hoping to have an opportunity to actually chat with the MAID committee themselves.
Oh, amazing.
Coming up here. So, maybe we'll follow up on that when I have some new news.
We'll have you back on anytime. You just say the word and we'll do it. So, and we'll be closely following along your story as well. As things come up in the news, feel free to send them my way. We're pretty good at finding stuff, the latest that comes out in the media, and we'll link to those in our newsletter as well. So, yeah, that's great.
That sounds great.
Thanks so much, Thomas.
Well, wonderful chat with you, Brett.
Yeah, cheers, man.